This podcast is brought to you by DIA, the trusted global neutral forum for healthcare product development professionals. DIA, driving insights to action.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ranjini Prithviraj. I'm Associate Director of Publications at DIA. And today I have with me Kathleen Maxian, President and Founder of the Ovarian Cancer Project. Could you tell us a little bit about the Ovarian Cancer Project, its history and its mission?
I'm actually the founder of the Ovarian Cancer Project, and I founded it about 4 years after I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer myself. I was 47 years old, and I was told that I had a 20% chance of living for 5 years. So it's almost been it'll be nine years in September, and after two recurrences, I'm very lucky to be here. So we know in the United States that there are about 22,000 women a year who are diagnosed with ovarian cancer, and it's a very deadly disease. Most women are diagnosed in advanced stages, and most women die within 5 years. About 15,000 women per year die of ovarian cancer. So in founding the Ovarian Cancer Project, I wanted women to know that there are symptoms of ovarian cancer. It's new health information for women. They were symptoms that I had, but I didn't know that it was ovarian cancer. I thought that I was fatigued. I thought that I was going to the bathroom a lot just because I had a tipped uterus maybe, but it really was tumors pressing on my bladder, making me urinate more frequently. And I think those are things that women pass off. You know, we're very busy, we're taking care of other people. The other part of what we do, the other half of our mission, is to support women with ovarian cancer. And to that end, we have a mentoring program, support groups. And I'm very proud of the fact that our patients, when they come to us from the very beginning, really become part of our culture. And we teach them not only to handle the symptoms and the side effects of treatment and emotionally to get through, but we're actually teaching them about their disease. And studies show that women who are educated about their ovarian cancer and about their disease have a better quality of life, have less depression, and actually do better overall than women who don't participate in that type of support group.
No, I can only imagine the fear and uncertainty that comes with a cancer diagnosis. So the services that you provide are great. You know, there's so much still that's left to do. So what are some of the top priorities for the Ovarian Cancer Project this coming year?
Well, I think we like to stay really close to our mission. So getting the word out, we've written a grant to actually get our small symptom and risk cards out. And we do, all of our services are free of charge. So we're a true private nonprofit. I don't take a salary, although we do have two part-time social workers who we do pay to facilitate our support groups. But we're a real basic volunteer organization. So we depend heavily on sponsors and writing grants to get this information out to the general public. So we have some great free symptom and risk cards, and you can get them by going to our website and filling out a contact form and just letting me know what your name is and where you live, and we will actually send you these cards for free. And they fit in a woman's wallet. They're great for gynecological offices, for anybody really, to give out, women's groups, anywhere there's a community of women, to get this good new health information out to people, because they also include risk factors for ovarian cancer, and women have no idea what their risk factors are. And after they read these, you know, family history is very important. Some of the saddest things we see are women who've had breast cancer who come to us after a breast cancer diagnosis and have been diagnosed with ovarian cancer that could have been prevented. So our biggest priorities right now for the Ovarian Cancer Project is getting that information out and continuing to evolve our programs. One of the things that's happened is, since getting our own office, it's really given an incredible amount of legitimacy to what we do, and there's really been an explosion. So a lot of capacity building as far as having enough social workers to help these women. We also want to add this year in capacity building is also supportive services for families and friends of women who have ovarian cancer. We're finding that this is something that's being asked for by our community, and this is something that in the next year is really going to become a priority for what we do. to the same end as our mission. We're also involved in public policy advocacy. I work as an advocate leader for the Ovarian Cancer Research Fund Alliance, so I'm going to Washington several times a year and working locally with our federal constituents on the importance of research funding for ovarian cancer and cancer in general. And then I'm also involved in a local IRB meeting with the Roswell Park Cancer Institute and a very large spore between Roswell and the University of Pittsburgh. And that spore is a specialized program in research excellence for ovarian cancer, and I work as an advocate on that. Yeah, so in the past I've done some national work as well with the National Cancer Institute's Gynecological Steering Committee. I served on that committee for 3 years as a patient advocate. So try to keep my hand in the national stuff.
Oh, most definitely. Now, I take it a lot of your activities and services are volunteer-driven. How would you like to get the community more involved?
Well, I think one of the things, and this really kind of comes back to what's happening here at DIA, is that there's a real push now for industry and government and anybody who's funding clinical trials to have that patient perspective. So we really want to invite people, you know, anyone who's met us here or seen us here or even heard this podcast or seen this on YouTube, we really want to invite you to engage with us. Not only through doing our community events where we're doing fundraising, but also to come to us if you are looking for patients for clinical trials, or you're looking for a patient engagement, or you're looking for just a patient perspective. We're more than willing and happy to invite you to come in, to meet with our patients, to talk with our patients, to understand exactly what's important to them and how they navigate through life with this very deadly disease.
And it's a good segue. So now as a DIA patient scholar, what do you hope to accomplish at this meeting?
Well, I've been here a few days already, and a couple of things that I think is really important for me is I'm really gaining an understanding of how an organization, a private nonprofit organization like ours, can engage with different drug companies. We both want the same thing. We want treatments that are good treatments for our patients. Ultimately, we want a cure for cancer, right? So how do we get there? One of the big issues right now is how do these companies engage patients? How do we interact with them? How do we develop relationships with companies so that we're both getting to that end, but it's mutually beneficial, right? I think up until this point, I think it's been something that's been more transactional, where say I'm having an event and a drug company would be sponsoring me. And so how do we change that relationship to something that's maybe less transactional and more relationship building? You know, we're looking for companies to come to us, sit down with our patients, engage with our patients, let us know what you need. And I think in our organization, we're giving you a very high quality patient. Like I said, our support groups are not only a part of that, you know, just getting you through treatment and the emotional part of it, but we're also engaging with patients and helping them understand what their disease is, how they got their disease, what were the factors in that, and then how they move through treatment, okay? Just to give you a few examples, the importance of genetic testing. So just recently, the ovarian cancer community got three new drugs called PARP inhibitors that have been very important for a subsection of our patient population, and that's women with BRCA. And also we're seeing these drugs now start to work with patients who don't even have the BRCA, whether it's a germline or a somatic. So we're seeing really, for the first time in 40 years really, these new drugs have made a huge impact for women with ovarian cancer. So we're encouraging, we're trying to develop a very sophisticated patient so that they know that having a genetic test, and we encourage women to go through genetic counseling as well, pre and post test counseling, because of the importance of the information that's being shared and how that not only affects them, but also their families. We want to make sure that all women know that. And it's interesting because some of the docs that we work with locally don't do that right off the bat with women with ovarian cancer. So we feel as though our patients need to ask for that and really be the catalyst in making that happening. As we go down the line in treatments, we really want to make sure that patients also know the importance of molecular tumor profiling, which is something that's very new, really, in the field of cancer. So we want our patients to be asking for the latest and greatest. We want our patients to understand what that means for them, how to ask for it, what the results can mean for them. And we also, a big thing that we talk about all the time is participation in clinical trials. And I think that's changed somewhat too in the field of cancer, especially with the immunotherapies. When I first started in this whole thing, we were encouraging women to get involved in phase 2 and phase 3 clinical trials, you know, for the best outcomes. Mm-hmm. And now we're really saying, look at phase 1 trials in immunotherapy are really something that are very, they're an option for you. We certainly need to have this information, you know, going into the trial, but we want to encourage our women to participate in this and have a good understanding of what it means to enter a clinical trial and how that can benefit you and how it can benefit ultimately the rest of the patient population.
So thank you so much for being here, Kathleen, and thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
To learn more about this topic, visit us online at diaglobal.org.